are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. I'm Wes Goldberg. I'm here with David Rommel, and from the Washington Post, it's Ben Golliver. We've got a packed show for you today. We're going to talk about the reshaped Eastern Conference and what's next for Kawhi Leonard. But we'll start with the Brooklyn Nets, who are undoubtedly the winners of free agency after signing both Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving on Sunday in a move that, according to Bleacher Report's Howard Beck, had been decided months ago. Ben, it's an unbelievable turnaround from a team that had been in perhaps the worst cap and asset position of all time just a few years ago.
Yeah, they had the NBA's worst record 2 years ago, but they also haven't won 50 games in almost two decades. I mean, it's a franchise that is regularly overlooked by high-profile free agents for years and years. They've had to make some really risky moves in the past to even acquire kind of star players, whether it was trading early for Deron Williams and obviously the big blockbuster that came back to bite them after that. So for them, I mean, this is an incredible celebration. I mean, it's, you know, one of the highest moments, even if there's going to be a little bit of delayed gratification with Kevin Durant not really playing next season and going into next year with, you know, a pretty big hole at that spot. For them, it's a massive win. I guess I flip it around and I wonder, what exactly do the Nets have to offer Kevin Durant? And how much of this decision was motivated by his injury? Because I just think he brings a lot more to the table for that franchise than they do vice versa. And that was not the case with the Golden State Warriors decision he made 3 years ago. I think he really benefited from the talent that was in Golden State, but also the environment, the style of play, the teammates that he was able to work with. And I look at guys like Kyrie Irving and DeAndre Jordan. I don't even think you can call them a big three. I don't think that they're qualified enough in terms of where DeAndre Jordan's game is right now to fit that bill. And I have really serious questions about whether Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant are going to be able to make each other better when they play together.
David, do you have those same concerns about playing about Durant and Kyrie playing together?
Yeah, I think they're legitimate. And on top of that, I mean, but I would also add that I think maybe Durant has had a taste of winning at a high level, and maybe it's a pivot in his way of thinking about what's best. And maybe it's just an improvement on a lifestyle choice. Maybe he feels that the Brooklyn environment might be one that's more conducive to, I don't know, enjoying the rest of his NBA career for as long as his contract lasts, if he decides to re-sign there or whatever. I mean, I don't know. I'm just, the Eastern Conference seems like it's an easier path to eventually, get to the finals perhaps and maybe compete for championships. But that's not necessarily a guarantee either, given that other teams have improved around the East. And as far as the ability of Kyrie and KD to complement each other, I mean, there are concerns there. I think they're both somewhat temperamental as well. I think they do have issues with media and how they approach the public and things of that sort. So I'm curious to see how those relationships kind of play out. And I'm not as scared of the New York media, obviously, as many people have kind of looked at this pairing and how that might play out. But at the same time, I'm kind of curious to see how they do wind up connecting with their fan base and with the high expectations of the franchise.
That locker room is going to be weird, and I feel bad for the beat reporters who, you know, you toss up the softball question just to get the generic quote that you need to fill out your story on deadline, and Durant is going to come back and just be, he's like, what are we even talking about if we're not talking about basketball? You're like, okay, that doesn't help my story. And then Kyrie is going to give you some nonsensical Instagram caption of a quote, and you're just like, what? Okay, that doesn't help me either, and this is going to take me 30 minutes to transcribe. But overall, I don't have that many concerns with Kyrie and Durant playing together, and maybe I'm naive, but they wanted to play together. This had been in the works. They had talked about playing together. You have to think that they have some sort of sense of how they are going to do that. And I think that both of them are such great shooters that you'll still have a little bit of that Steph Curry, Kevin Durant dynamic where they help each other even when they're off the ball. I think that there's a lot of good role players on that Brooklyn Nets team. And you know, it seems like, Ben, that Durant wanted to go to New York, that Kyrie had always been warm to the idea of going to New York, and there's only two teams in New York. It's the Brooklyn Nets, and then it's the New York Knicks, and it really felt like the New York Knicks didn't know how to do this. They knew how to get cap space, they knew how to trade away their franchise player to get more cap space, but they didn't really know how to build a basketball infrastructure that can promote winning and stability, and that's something that Brooklyn had, But this is as much of a win for this as it is for the Nets. This is a huge loss for the Knicks.
Oh, there's no doubt. But look, I mean, they just got outfoxed in this game. You know, Kyrie Irving winds up signing with Roc Nation. We know about their Brooklyn ties for years and years. And I think that, you know, it winds up being this all-out chase for talent, and they came in second. And unfortunately, it's, you know, one team can really win this. And so they're going to be painted as, you know, the biggest losers of the weekend. And, you know, frankly, they were. I think just to double back real quick on the relationship between Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, there is no doubt that he prioritized playing with his friends, Kyrie and DeAndre Jordan, over all other factors. There were opportunities to have a better chance at winning a title. There were opportunities to play with better weather. There was an opportunity to have greater fame by going to New York by himself. Whatever other factor that could motivate NBA players in their free agency decisions, Kevin Durant still had at his disposal. He could have made more money by staying with the Golden State Warriors. He chose the idea of personal happiness and playing with guys that he likes, and he clearly has a mutual respect for in terms of Kyrie Irving's game. Now, that being said, everyone can relate to what I'm about to say. Good friends don't always make good roommates, right? And I think that's yes. The question. You might, you know, have a great friendship. You love watching a guy's game on League Pass. You just marvel at his ball handling ability and his shot creation ability and everything else he does in terms of the crazy layups and all that and Kyrie Irving. But are you really prepared to live with that experience day in, day out, play in, play out, when you know he's going to be a minus defender, when you know he's going to struggle with the consistency, when you have to understand that there could potentially be some health concerns for Kyrie Irving because he's never been one of those guys who plays every single night, and he's had some pretty serious knee issues over the years. All of those are the kinds of questions that I think it's very easy to look past if you just want to make your decision based on somebody's personality and your relationship with them. And I think, unfortunately, those flaws could manifest in ways that maybe Kevin Durant didn't adequately prepare himself for, or maybe he talked himself out of.
Yeah, I think those are legitimate. I think that's something that you never take into consideration, is that you see these friendships kind of build on the periphery, and then you see that this is perhaps the main reasoning for them becoming professional colleagues together. And at the same time, I mean, these two guys are also among the more volatile, maybe, or whimsical, you know, at times, and they can both be prone to flights of fancy and act impetuously, and to have them together in the same locker room to kind of have to form their relationship again under the public eye and the scrutiny of this team that all of a sudden has incredible championship aspirations down the road. I mean, that makes it a much more potentially volatile situation than it should be.
I do understand it also, though, because he never really seemed to be friends with the guys in Golden State. It always felt more like co-workers, office mates. Like, maybe not roommates, Ben, but just kind of next door in cubicles. And we knew that the relationship between him and Draymond Green obviously broke down. And, he has a very good relationship with Kyrie. So I don't know if it's going to ultimately be the right move, but you kind of understand where this guy is in his life right now, saying, you know what, I want to play with guys that I really am just friends with. I want to be with my friends, like you said, and maybe he did prioritize. I mean, he gave up money to get DeAndre Jordan to sign there. I mean, that's everything right there. DeAndre Jordan, what, signed a $10 million a year deal?
Yeah.
He's not worth that anymore. Come on. Anyway, we'll talk about the other teams that won free agency after the break. For the latest takes on NBA free agency, follow all the Locked On NBA Podcast Network hosts on one Twitter feed at Locked On NBA Net. It's an awesome way to get all the latest opinions from the local experts during NBA free agency. Follow along on Twitter at LockedOnNBANet. With a lot of big moves already done, there's still one more huge domino to fall, and that's Kawhi Leonard. We'll talk about where he'll end up later on, but first, other than the Nets, who do you think is the biggest winner from the first 24 hours of free agency, Matt?
I think you've got two really strong candidates. I'd say the Philadelphia 76ers or the Utah Jazz. I'll go with the Philadelphia 76ers just because they were very, very busy and it was tricky to sort through all the players they lost, whether it was Jimmy Butler, J.J. Redick, and the guys they did keep in Tobias Harris. And frankly, I do think they overpaid Tobias Harris. I thought he probably got the most generous deal of anybody in the first 24 hours. But I think the Al Horford move was such a surgical and smart strike when you're looking at the playoff matchups among the top teams in the Eastern Conference. I mean, taking Al Horford, poaching him from Boston, totally neuters the Celtics. It helps them win that, you know, head-to-head postseason matchup. You know, basically no questions asked. It takes away their Embiid stopper, and also gives you another excellent interior defender who's going to be able to, you know, punish Boston in the postseason. It also really helps if you're trying to lock down Giannis Antetokounmpo for Milwaukee. We saw if you can take away the basket area and take away the paint from him, which is what happened in the Eastern Conference Finals and in Game 1 against Boston of the second round, that is how you beat the Milwaukee Bucks. And I think having the combination of Embiid and Horford inside is going to make a very imposing combination. And then they've also got a lot of length and athleticism around the wing now with Ben Simmons, Josh Richardson, and Tobias Harris. I think some people will say, look, there's these weird positional fits, like Horford should really be a five, Harris should really be a four, you know, Josh Richardson maybe is better suited as a three. I understand that, but there aren't that many teams, especially in sort of this post-supervillains warrior era, that can actually put like five legitimate perimeter threats on the court at the same time. I think the idea of, you know, being too big to match up with a death lineup is not something that should really concern Philadelphia. I think, like I said, they match up better with Milwaukee or Toronto or Boston than, you know, better than they did last season and better than, you know, frankly, any other team in the Eastern Conference. So from all of those, you know, put all that together, even though it was expensive, even though they probably gave out too long of deals to guys like Harris and Horford, I think they're in pole position right now to win the Eastern Conference next season. And you know, that's the kind of payoff you want to have if you're trying to turn sort of the process into reality. And I think, you know, kind of against all odds, they did it. I'll be honest, part of my excitement for them is just surprise. I thought Elton Brand had sort of backed himself into a corner. I thought if he lost Jimmy Butler, they were going to have a major setback of a summer, and I don't think that's what's happened here.
Yeah, the sign-and-trade route ended up being a real good option for Elton Brand, right? Because he was able to turn he gave up so many assets for Jimmy Butler, was able to turn Jimmy Butler and turn him into an asset, and then get a player in Josh Richardson who fits exactly what Philadelphia wants to do. And I'm with you. I thought Philadelphia got better. You trade Jimmy Butler, you get Josh Richardson, who's more of a complimentary piece. It allows you to lean more into Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, and then it creates enough cap space to go get Al Horford, and you hit the nail on the head there. Takes maybe the best Joel Embiid defender out of the conference. You don't have to compete with him anymore. And yeah, I thought they are definitely one of the winners, but I'm going to go ahead with the other team that was involved in that trade and say the Miami Heat, unsurprisingly, I'm going to go in that direction and say the Miami Heat are one of the biggest winners of the first 24 hours, only because if you consider where they came from, with no, like, written off as a player in one of the most impactful off seasons in a very, very long time, and they had no cap space, they had no assets, we heard all about this stuff, they had bad contracts, they find a way to, in a relationship that had been built towards the end of last season, inviting Jimmy Butler out for Dwayne Wade's last home game and doing all these things and building that relationship, Jimmy Butler partying in Miami after the end of the season and all this fun stuff, you build that relationship and you find a way to get the first meeting with Jimmy Butler in Miami, keep him in Miami. He never takes a meeting with Houston. He never takes any meetings with LA in LA. You keep him in-house. You get the deal done on free agency's opening day, and it costs you Josh Richardson, a nice young player, but you finally got an all-star where you can build around. You could start to build a program around and tinker that culture and try to take a step in the right direction after missing the playoffs last year. Considering where the Heat came from, to me, they are huge winners from the first day of free agency.
Yeah, I've got to say, obviously, that you know, from a Miami perspective, acquiring the superstar that they so sorely lack was definitely a big plus for Miami. And to echo what Ben said about Philadelphia, I think that seems like a really good team on paper. I mean, a very balanced unit and with a lot of, if not necessarily depth, at least there's a variety of different players that can do a number of different things and contribute towards winning. You know, I kind of look at the Milwaukee Bucks maybe as a dark horse as far as, not necessarily, maybe not the clear winners in free agency, but You look at what Toronto was able to do this past year, and I think there's some value in being able to kind of keep the core of your team together and find a way to build towards a championship. And from Milwaukee's perspective, you know, they keep Brook Lopez, they add Robin Lopez, they add Wesley Matthews, they, you know, keep George Hill there. Sure, they lose Brogdon, but at the same time, I feel like, you know, this was a team that was right on the cusp of being able to make it to the NBA Finals and potentially compete for a championship. And I think one more year of this core group together should be enough for them to kind of, you know, progress, take another step in the right direction. Obviously, Philadelphia will challenge them. I think other teams in the East can potentially be challengers as well. But if we assume that Kawhi is likely leaving Toronto, I'd say that Milwaukee has as good a chance as any team in the East of being able to compete for a title.
Well, let me ask you that question. Do you think that they are better than Philadelphia? Is it Philadelphia and Milwaukee to you, given that Brooklyn has like a little bit of a redshirt year here with Kevin Durant being out?
I think that's pretty clear. But at the same time, I think like we assume that Philadelphia's group as assembled, and sure, with Embiid and Simmons still there, maybe they won't have the same kind of time. They won't take as much time in order to kind of congeal and be an incredible unit there. And so obviously Harris played there. And Richardson, as you pointed out, as a more complimentary player. But, you know, there's going to be some growth changes and spurts there, and it's going to be a little bit more difficult. We're not going to see this team be the kind of powerhouse that they could potentially be right away. And given that, I kind of give Milwaukee a slight edge.
I like Philly slightly, but it's really close, like you described. Another win for Milwaukee was at least getting assets back for Malcolm Brogdon. They were able to get a future pick. I mean, that's one where I kind of thought the Brogdon signing would define their summer, because I anticipated them bringing Lopez back. I anticipated them bringing Middleton back. If Brogdon had gone to the wrong team, you know, another team that could really challenge them in the Eastern Conference, or if he had gone for nothing, I think that would have been the Bucks' kind of worst-case scenario. And instead, they're able to, you know, put him on a Pacers team where, okay, whatever, they're not going to be challenging Milwaukee next year, and they do get the assets back. You know, real quick, just to highlight what Utah did, much like Philadelphia, they have assembled a really quality starting five. I think that they were able to address their balance issues, get some supporting scores in there with Bogdanovich, and obviously Mike Conley brings an element of you know, playmaking as well alongside Donovan Mitchell, and yet I still don't think that they've sacrificed their defensive identity. To me, Utah is now one of these teams that's kind of percolating at the top of the Western Conference, which is still, you know, kind of wide open as we wait for the Kawhi Leonard decision. And I think they deserve some love here in this conversation too.
100%. And you think about all the things that, you know, if you're a front office and you look at your team needs, they went out and addressed those team needs. They pivot a little bit in getting a little bit more shooters around Rudy Gobert. And I thought that was helpful. I also want to shout out the Sacramento Kings. And I can't believe I'm doing this. But on paper, like, you look at the...
Careful now.
I know. Every time you say something nice about the Sacramento Kings, they hear it, and then they do something to screw it up. So I'll say this, you know, with an air of caution, but you look at the players that they got. None of them, obviously, like Harrison Barnes, I guess, is the big name, but they're not going to leap into. They're not definitely a playoff team, but I think they win in a sense that they are overcoming their own demons. That they're just not. They're not just doing dumb stuff like signing Rajon Rondo. You know what I mean? Like, they're making smart decisions. And I think that's a big win for Sacramento. You sign Harrison Barnes, you bolster a young core with valuable veterans, not just dudes that are old, but veterans that can help and mentor, like Trevor Ariza. And you get a floor-spacing center like Dwayne Dedmon, who fits. You renounce Willie Cauley-Stein, whose jig was sort of up there. I liked the moves that they made. And then, they get Corey Joseph on Monday. I thought that was a good move. They needed a backup point guard. You could potentially play Corey Joseph alongside De'Aaron Fox there, get some interesting lineups that way. It's nice to see Sacramento making the right moves, just smart, decisive moves, as opposed to just screwing things up like they used to in the past.
They've progressed to respectability. There's no question. They didn't have a real headlining move here, but they added a bunch of vets, like you mentioned. I think they're actually going to be able to sneak in that eighth playoff spot, you know, just based on the progress of their young guys and the fact that none of their signings, no real bad character guys among their signings, and no guys who are going to put themselves before the team. I think you've got a lot of team-oriented guys with their moves. And I think, you know, for Vlade, there's been a lot of head scratchers over the years, but I think he has elevated himself out of that conversation among the guys who are just like totally clueless. Like, I think Phoenix and some of these other teams out there have sort of taken, you know, that honor away from him, or that dishonor away from him. Mm-hmm. And that counts as progress.
It's a big win for them. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll talk about Kawhi Leonard, because wherever he lands, that could be another huge winner. It will be another huge winner from this free agency. You're listening to Locked On NBA. There's one major decision left this free agency, and that's Kawhi Leonard. We'll talk about that in a minute. But first, instead of losing Kevin Durant for nothing, the Warriors negotiated a sign and trade to bring back D'Angelo Russell from the Nets. Ben, do you think that this helps the Warriors next season? What do you make of the D'Angelo Russell situation?
I think they're trading for him to trade him, if that makes sense. And there's going to have to be a delay factor in terms of when they're going to be able to, you know, get him trade eligible. But I'm not sure that he's a real fit. They have so many different needs. You know, number one, I think at this point would be depth. That they're way better off taking his skill set and his value as a guy that some people view as, you know, an all-star level player or a franchise building block. I mean, you could totally see what Minnesota was thinking in pursuing D'Angelo Russell, a 23-year-old point guard, to pair with their 23-year-old center, Karl Anthony Towns. Like, that grouping makes a lot more sense than trying to shove D'Angelo Russell's pick-and-roll game into this Golden State Warriors offense where everybody's moving the ball all the time and moving off the ball, and Steph Curry's, you know, going to be a big-time scorer for them. I just don't see that pairing making a lot of sense. So I think that maybe he has a little bit of star power early in the year as they transition to Chase Center. Maybe he helps fill some minutes while they're waiting for Klay Thompson to kind of come back from his ACL injury. But I think ultimately his real value for them is as a trade chip. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if, you know, at this time next year, you know, Russell kind of gets his wish and he winds up in Minnesota.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, and kind of another point about this is, does Golden State miss the playoffs? Like, do they have enough? And you know, depending on when they do wind up trading D'Angelo Russell, as that seems likely to be the case, do they still compete for a playoff spot? I mean, I don't think that you could see them as legitimate title contenders at this point, but is there a chance, in your opinion, that maybe they might miss out on the playoffs altogether? Because with Klay missing significant amount of time, and obviously Steph will be the leading, you know, everything on that team, what's left there with Andre Iguodala gone now? I mean, I look at that group, and obviously it's the end of an era in Golden State, and I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. But I don't even know where to, I don't know where they fit in the Western Conference hierarchy now. We're assuming, or we think, I think all three of us, that Kawhi is probably Lakers bound. And if that's the case, then they're the clear forerunners in the Western Conference. But I mean, Portland's improved to some degree. Utah, as we talked about earlier, is a better team. I mean, there are a lot of teams in the Western Conference that I think are a significantly step above where Golden State can wind up being next year, even by adding Russell. I mean, the fact that he's probably not the best fit in that, you know, lineup is one thing. But even given what they have on that team and knowing that Thompson's going to be missing most of the year, like, they may be on the outside looking in as far as the playoffs are concerned.
Yeah, I think they still have enough to get to the playoffs, because you've got, like, I know the fit isn't perfect, but I do think that we tend to overanalyze fit as opposed to just the guy's really talented and he can shoot and he can just do things with the ball. So when you kind of have, if D'Angelo Russell is the guy that you have filling those Klay Thompson minutes, it's not the worst thing. It's better than Quinn Cook filling those Klay Thompson minutes while Klay recovers. If you can get Klay back mid-season or towards the playoff run, you still got that Draymond Green, Steph Curry pick and roll to base your offense around. The D'Angelo Russell sign and trade, the fact that they executed a sign and trade does give them a hard cap that's going to hurt their depth and the way they build this team for the rest of the summer. But I still think that they find a way with the talent that they have, with the culture that they have in place, with Steve Kerr still there being the head coach, they get into the playoffs. And if they're not going to be the one seed, but they're probably not going to be one. They might not even have home court advantage in the first round, for all we know. But if they get into the playoffs and they're healthy then, and they execute some sort of trade to move D'Angelo Russell midseason and get some real useful players back that fit a little bit better than what we're talking about, yeah, they can make some noise in the playoffs.
To me, their whole playoff hopes hinge on Steph Curry's health. Like, if Curry misses more than 10 games, I'm not sure how they're going to get in, right? I mean, they're that thin, and they're going to be that dependent on his, you know, gravity and everything else to kind of make their offense go. But I do think there's a scenario where, like, let's say they can kind of hang around by the deadline. They wind up trading, you know, Russell, and let's say you're getting back, like, Covington or, you know, other, like, kind of starter caliber type players where you're just plugging those guys in. You might be lacking the star power that Russell brings, or that obviously Kevin Durant brought, or the championship experience of an Andre Iguodala, but you might be getting back closer to like the original Warriors where they were trying to figure it out and, you know, relying on just capable players like a Harrison Barnes to kind of skate by. And in that scenario, okay, maybe they're able to win a playoff series if they can kind of get those lineups together and get Klay Thompson back on the court. I mean, to me, they're a clear cut below who will be the best teams in the Western Conference. And if anything goes wrong, by the way, next season, if it's Steph Curry's health or whatever it might be, they should be seriously considering the virtues of tanking, right? Just using a rest year, letting those guys kind of shut it down a little bit. If it starts to be choppy early, I wouldn't be afraid at all for them to pull the plug, get yourself a nice draft pick, and then move forward.
The old Tim Duncan trick. Well, other than the Warriors, there's still a lot of things to sort through as far as the hierarchy. The Lakers are getting better. The Clippers are still in limbo waiting on Kawhi's decision. And it seems like that decision is coming down to the Clippers, the Lakers, and of course the Raptors. The Lakers in particular seem to be gaining some momentum. Ben, do you think that the Lakers are a real threat to land Kawhi?
Oh, they've been in this mix for a while. It does seem like their momentum is growing like you're describing. I also kind of think like the longer that Kawhi drags this out, and I know we're in this like instant era of like every decision's been announced, you know, basically $3 billion worth of agreements were announced in what, like the first 10 hours, which is just completely insane. So it's not like, you know, Kawhi is dragging his feet. It's barely been a day into free agency. But the longer it goes, the more nervous I would be if I was Toronto, right? Because their case has already been made. And it would also start to feel like, okay, are they trying to build something up here and turning this into this big, like, splashy thing where the Lakers wind up, like, you know, owning the summer with this new big three? So that would really have me nervous. But I think it's fascinating the way that the first 24 hours played out. Either the Lakers or the Clippers, if they don't get him, are really going to be up a creek because all of their other targets, whether it's Jimmy Butler, Kyrie Irving, D'Angelo Russell, like the list goes on and on. All those other guys are already off the board. So it's sort of turned into this like Kawhi or bust strategy for both those teams. And clearly, like if you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis and a bunch of role players, you're still going to fare pretty well next season. But I don't think that they would enter as the title favorites, even if Vegas views them that way, unless they get Kawhi Leonard. And for the Clippers, I think Kawhi Leonard's the difference between being, you know, a one or two seed in the conference and right back on the playoff bubble fighting to get in. So the stakes are enormous here. If I had to bet right now, I would say the Lakers, but I'm not super confident with that. And I do hope that this gets done, you know, sooner rather than later. I understand the desire to take meetings, to kind of meet people, to feel out questions like, hey, what kind of coach is Frank Vogel going to be? Or, you know, with the Clippers, you know, how do you guys anticipate building your roster going forward? Are you going to try to get a second star through a trade, or what's the game plan here? But, you know, don't dilly-dally here. Let's get this thing wrapped up before the holiday.
You know, you bring up a good point I hadn't really considered before, but Vogel, I mean, he doesn't really have that kind of experience as far as guiding a team into a championship-level contention, and he's never had the kind of players that he has now in LeBron James and Anthony Davis and potentially in Kawhi. Do you see him as being a person that's capable of leading this group? And, you know, he's going to be under a hell of a lot of scrutiny there. And obviously already people are, you know, theorizing that Jason Kidd is waiting in the wings there to take over his spot there. But do you see that as being a problem? Is Vogel, in your experience and talking to him, do you think he's a person who's capable of kind of guiding this group? And is he the right person for this job?
I mean, it's really interesting because he's very well respected and he had a great track record in Indiana as a defensive-minded coach and getting sort of the most out of his players. So you feel like those things would appeal to Kawhi Leonard, but he doesn't have that big personality. He doesn't really have a ton of charisma. He doesn't have a championship ring. And so if you're trying to compare him to Doc Rivers or Nick Nurse, the other teams that are sort of in this mix, like that's clearly a negative from LA's standpoint. And I also think, you know, people were already suggesting that Kidd was going to try to usurp him at some point before they got Anthony Davis and before they got Kawhi Leonard. I think as the pressure ramps up, Vogel is going to be looking over his shoulder. That's a natural, you know, human inclination, especially given the fact that Kidd's a former coach and has a lot of the cachet and the personality stuff that I was mentioning earlier. So it's a strange dynamic. You know, at the same time, if you're Kawhi Leonard, the coach might not be the most important thing. Like, you just proved that you could win with the rookie NBA coach. As long as you had, you know, a decent supporting cast around you, you could kind of pull a team through that. And I think ultimately any coach, whether it's Vogel or Nick Nurse or anybody else, is going to be turning the ball over to Kawhi Leonard a lot and trying to get out of the way. I mean, wasn't that sort of, you know, a big part of Nick Nurse's genius was just saying like, hey, Kawhi, when we're in trouble, you save us. And Kawhi came through time and time again for them during that postseason. So, I'm not sure Vogel would be a deal breaker, but I do think his presence is one of the weakest aspects of the Lakers' pitch.
from a selfish standpoint, I really hope he doesn't sign with the Lakers. We'll see what happens, obviously. But, you know, I think one of the stories from this free agency in general is how much evening out there has been as far as, you know, all the competitive teams that have now sort of risen throughout the league. You have the Warriors obviously taking a step back. You've got Houston and Milwaukee with their cores intact. Philadelphia, you know, Boston and Brooklyn will be right there too. You've got a lot, and obviously we talked about Utah. Denver is still right there. Like, there's the league is wide open. And to me, if Kawhi goes to the Lakers, they have a big three that is better than any other big three in the league. And I'm not ready to say that they would just automatically win the title. I'm not ready to put them on, like, Golden State Warriors super team, adding Kevin Durant to a 73-win team, because you still got to figure out what the rest of that roster looks like. And that's still going to matter, despite having those three guys in place. But it would give them a significant advantage. And I kind of want to just see Kawhi build another team, build another contender, either by staying in Toronto or by going to the Clippers and doing it there. And then even without Kawhi, the Lakers are still going to be involved, and that's still going to be fun because you got LeBron and Anthony Davis, and you could spend that max level money on a few different players to fill out that roster. That's what I'm rooting for. I have no idea what's going to happen, but that's what I'm rooting for. That's it for today. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On NBA on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, please leave us a review. Thanks for listening.